coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Who Shot Ya? It's your boy, your host, Ricky Carmona. This is a movie podcast that isn't just three straight white dudes. Very excited about our show. Today, with me always, I got my co-hosts, to my left here, film critic, host of the Switchblade Sisters podcast right here on Maximum Fun, it's April Wolf. April.
Hi, Ricky.
Hi, April. What's good with you, April?
I don't know. I really forgot to think about something else. I wonder if the listeners know how difficult it is for me to think of something good.
Once a week.
It's actually an exercise. It's like I should have a diary, but instead I'm on Ricky's podcast.
What is good?
It's your gratitude journal.
I guess I'm just like super grateful that they serve wine on airplanes because I was thinking about the other day how much worse it would be if they didn't.
Yeah. Once you start drinking on an airplane, game changer.
It is.
I'm all on board. We shared a lovely glass of wine when we went to the Poconos.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. From Max FunCon East.
Yeah,
that was
correct.
A great time.
Yep. Oh, and to my right here, film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonzo Duralde.
Hey, Ricky.
You already answered the most important question I had before we even recorded, was whether or not you had that Cafe Bustelo.
Oh, yeah.
You hollered at that.
It was a delicious punch in the face. And I thank you for that.
Yes! I love it. What's good with you, sir?
My good thing is also airplane related. A woman sat down next to me with a baby. And I thought, oh, God, it's going to be one of those flights. And then about a minute later, spontaneously, I sneezed a couple of times. And I don't have a cold or anything. But, you know, you get dust in your nose, whatever. And that was all it took. Like, she was traveling with another adult, and suddenly that baby was sitting somewhere else. So I have cracked the code. If you ever have a baby next to you on a plane, just sneeze before takeoff, and that kid is going to move.
Oh, my God. I thought the story was going to end up, but, like, I made friends with a baby, and it was just so wonderful. But instead, it's just like, I pushed that baby out of its
seat.
That's
right. Away. Get away.
And we have a return guest, a fan favorite here at Who Shot Ya? Producer, film festival programmer, the Queen Rocka, number one Chief Rocka, Drea Clark is back in the building, y'all. That's what's up.
Yay!
Drea!
I wish people could see Ricky because hearing him is already an experience, but you do not hold back on the facial or body front either. It's all so good.
If I could stand while I host this podcast, I totally would. Oh. Like, if I could just be like,
get you a work desk in the booth.
Drea, what's good, yo?
Thanks, yo. That's my old boy, Ricky. You guys know him, right? So what's good with me is transportation related indirectly. But if you live in Los Angeles or have visited Los Angeles or watched a movie about Los Angeles, you'll realize that one of our like small town eccentricities is a woman named Angeline. And in the last week, and she's this incredible looking blonde woman in her 60s that drives a bright pink Corvette. She looks like she was styled by like Hugh Hefner and Russ Meyer. Like she's this whole thing. And she used to have billboards with her name on them. Anyway, I saw her 3 times in the last week, like in the wild, randomly driving by me in different points. And doesn't matter how long you live here, whenever you pass Angeline, it's like you get bonus points for that day.
It's a good luck charm.
Yes, it's like you've tinged a gold coin and it's like filled up your coffers and you're like, Angeline. And so 3 times in 1 week, I'm expecting a windfall real soon.
That is LA magic.
Yeah.
You all have seen Angeline? You are aware of this?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh,
yeah. Oh.
I saw her once when her car broke down, and I was just like, do I help? What do I do?
Oh, God. Does she speak English? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I approach her?
She hangs out in West Hollywood, so I actually see her with some occasional frequency.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm going to keep my eyes open for
You've
Angeline.
You've never seen Angeline?
No, I'm not. This is the first time I'm hearing of this L.A. phenomenon.
I bet you're going to see her all the time.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah.
Now that you've heard it.
Oh, shit. That's it? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, Angeline, my girl. Oh, yeah. Girl. That's yeah. What's up.
Old what's
girl.
Good, Ricky?
Oh, what's good with me, thank you, is I have had these glasses here for a minute. You know what? I'm getting new glasses tomorrow.
Yay.
Ooh. Very excited.
You're going to be a different person. I'm serious. I have the Superman conundrum where I can't I can't. If you put new glasses on, I cannot recognize you.
I'm also going to be wearing a cape too, so I don't know if that's going
to. Well, and we're going to look different to him too, because it's going to be a better prescription.
So I'm very excited about that. I've had these glasses forever. You know what's bad? When Facebook wants to share a memory from 10 years ago and you're wearing the same exact glasses in those. I was like, oh, Ricky, come on now.
I've been wearing a version of these frames since 1996.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Those are banging-ass glasses, though. I think now that I look at yours, I think mine are going to be very similar to yours.
Ooh, all right.
Nice.
Well, I think I've subconsciously influenced you.
You inceptioned me, bro.
Is the top still spinning?
Well, speaking of eyewear, we are going to be talking about film fashion. Do you like that segue
that
there?
Was so
nice.
Thank you. We are going to be talking about fashion in film, and we are going to be talking about the new Paul Thomas Anderson film, Phantom Thread. We're also going to be, we had people in the room right here. I'm surrounded by people who were at Sundance this year.
La-di-da.
So we're going to be playing a game regarding Sundance, and we're also going to be ending our show with staff picks like we usually do. But before all that, let's get into our new segment of the show, It a Dick. Which stands for, is this important, do I care? How this works is, I will read a news blurb or a headline. Alonzo, April, or Drea will answer two simple questions. Is this important, do I care? So let's get started. The first one is very simple. Boom! It was the big day this week. On Tuesday, the Oscar nominations were announced. Is this important, do you all care?
Duh.
We should have a duh category.
I mean, I guess. No, look, it's obviously a big deal that we have what, the fifth ever woman nominated for Best Director, right?
Yes.
In 90 years?
Yep.
And the fifth African-American director?
Yep.
Again, in 90 years.
Yep.
So, hooray.
I will say there were some nice milestones. The female DP, Rachel Morrison, is the first female cinematographer, which is bonker bananas.
Mm-hmm.
And you pointed 90 years.
Yeah. Thank you.
And you pointed out a film that Alonzo actually picked as a staff pick, Strong Country.
Strong Island.
I'm saying it. I know I'm wrong. Strong Island. Yance is the first openly trans director ever be nominated.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly cool since that film is not about that.
Exactly,
like oftentimes that sort of representation seeks in, and this is, he's just a director directing something about his family. But
I of course went right to the snubs.
Yeah,
well,
sure.
Actually, snub is a stupid word, and I think we should all stop saying it because it makes it sound like they all got in a room like, oh, fuck that guy. It's like, you know, this person came in sixth for all we know. But, you know, it's I'm really mad about the sound people from Mother.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, you can hate that movie up and down, but that sound design was on point.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Armie Hammer and Holly Hunter and Lois Smith and, Luca Guadagnino. Like, there's a lot of people that just that got...
I say Dee Reese, too.
Dee Reese. But nominated for adapted screenplay.
Adapted screenplay, yeah.
And probably not a ton of black women in that category in the 90 years, I'm
imagining. No.
I don't know if she's the first, but definitely they could all fit in a, you know, hatchback.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
For me, I'm excited that there are two horror films that are nominated for Best Picture, which is pretty, as a genre fan, I'm like, oh my God, is it totally okay for me to be this person now? Because everyone is just like...
Yeah, it was really holding you back before.
Yeah. But, you know, it's you're not considered the kind of a credible film fan in some respects.
Sure.
And you can like some 70s horror films, some of them,
right?
You know, but there was
you can
a time.
Like, Don't Look Back. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, that's we can like that, and then nothing else. Anything past the 70s is
and Eyes Without a Face.
Oh yeah, yes. Thank yes. Woo, woo, thank God. I've got those two on my shelf. Don't look. Yeah.
Oh, hey, is this important? Do y'all care about this? Did you know that Mad Max could spit mad fire? Tom Hardy recorded a rap album titled Falling on Your Arse in 1999 under the name Tommy One, and it just leaked online. Can we listen to a clip, please, from the track? Oh, yeah. We got one for you, Drea. We got one.
Pitter patter.
Yes. This is from the track Dough Back Again, with Hardy doing his best ODB, Old Dirty Bastard impression. Dough back again with the fucking flow.
you're useless. I'm fucking ruthless. I'm ruthless. I leave you fucking toothed. Smack that head crack. Leave you on the fucking tarmac with a crack. Oh, all your fucking crew go down. That's the way it's going down. As I walk around the town, Caledonia. Want some? But you can't handle it. It's the way it's gonna be. I'm my family. I'm my family.
All right, those beats are fire. I'll say the beats are fire. Solid, the beats are solid. Shout out to
Eddie Too Tall.
Eddie Too Tall. They have to work
on
their
names.
That's
the name of the producer.
Yeah, yeah. That's the name.
Oh, yeah. British, yeah. You guys. They're British.
They have to work on those names. But is this important? Do you all care?
What I care about is
my hip-hop fellow here,
yes.
Please.
The beats are amazing. I did have that face. If you've ever gone to see freestyle or like new artist rap, you get that cringy, like, oh my God, find the beat.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah,
that's the look. I'm like,
you're
right.
Looking at it like, come on, man.
You're right. You can do this, guy. You got this. But I did appreciate that he rapped with a audible accent, because so many people learn rap from American artists, and then you get the Iggy Azalea where you're like, I'm sorry, where are you from? So I give a little bonus for that.
I was just thinking about how, you know, Timothée Chalamet, Oscar nominee, also apparently has some like kind of embarrassing rap videos following him around now from his teen years. And I'm reminded how in the 80s, Rhino Records put out this compilation called Golden Throats, and it was all songs by like William Shatner and Robert Conrad and like TV stars trying to be pop singers. There has got to be like an embarrassing hip-hop compilation featuring non-hip-hop celebrities in the making.
I like this idea very much so. Absolutely.
Question. Yes. Would you include Shaq on that list, or is Shaq a verifiable hip-hop artist?
Shaq is the hoopa, the hypa, comes with the fifa. Come on now. Come on. I'm not stopping you. All right. Is this important? Do y'all care about this? The president of the National Hispanic Media Coalition, Alex Nogales, said it might be time to protest the Academy Awards this year to call out the lack of Hispanic representation. Now, in an interview with the New York Times, he said, "We've tried to push this in less hostile ways, but these studios don't seem to understand anything else. Is this important? Do you care?"
Well, fuck yeah.
Azúcar.
You know, again, we talk about this all the time, that when movies that are not about white dudes make money, they're always flukes. If it's about women, if it's about blacks, if it's about gays, if it's about whatever, that it doesn't count. And it's like, you have this hugely growing Hispanic population who fucking go to movies. Like, they're the last reliable audience that isn't going to just wait for Netflix. You know, the Paranormal Activity series would not exist without their steady patronage, you know.
Get residual checks from them.
Yeah. And like Pantelion is a whole company that exists just to hit that audience, and they do really well with this stuff, even though their movies are not always the best. There's no even if you assume that all reasons for everything the studios ever do is about money, there's no financial reason not to include more Hispanic and Latino performers.
Yeah, and all the research that I was looking at when I was in creative development said that the Hispanic audience was the fastest growing, and the market share is insane for how much more money Hispanic audiences spend at theaters. It's incredible. I can't believe it.
Yeah, why studios, leave it on the table?
Yeah, studios love Skrilla. I don't know why they're not following that. I will say I'm totally for them doing whatever protest, drawing attention to it. We've also talked before about that bringing attention at the Oscars is great, but it actually starts way earlier with the creation of the film. But there is something I would love for, like, an Asian group that has the same kind of coalition, or Middle Eastern. There's different representation that equally should be jumping in on this bandwagon. I don't know about their box office numbers, but it's one of those. Was it Chris Rock who hosted the Oscars a few years ago, and then did a lot of like apologetic?
Or he asked people who Jude Law was, or whatever.
Yeah, he did all this like nice referential stuff of like the Oscars so white, and but it. I started cringing midway through because it became so black and white, as if, oh, well, if we have Octavia Spencer, then we don't need to notice any other minority representation.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, yeah, I think every group that wants to feel included to the party and should get on that. That's my sort of up with people pitch for it.
Salad.
That's just had to get that in there.
Thank you very much.
I'm just mad that Lupe Ontiveros died Oscarless. That's all I'm going to say.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Rest in power. Well, hey, y'all, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to be talking about fashion and film and Phantom Thread. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. Freddie Wong.
Matt Arnold.
And Will Campos.
Here to tell you about Story Break, a writer's room podcast where every week we, the Hollywood geniuses behind Video Game High School, have 1 hour to turn a humble idea into an awesome movie.
Thrill as we weave the tragic tale of Jar Jar, a Star Wars story.
We're going to double down on everything that made the prequels great. Jar Jar, Trade Federation, politics.
Gasp as we assemble a pantheon of heroes for the Kellogg Cinematic Universe.
We could get rid of Snap, Crackle, Pop. I wouldn't even miss them.
You're crazy.
They die in the second.
Oh, come on!
And join us as we make fun of Matt as he struggles to name a single Beyonce song.
Well, yeah, put a finger on it. Sure, she wants to be Beyonce.
Put a finger on it. Beyonce's famous song.
Will we break the story?
Or will the story break us?
Find out by joining us in the writer's room every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hushaya. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in studio, I have...
Alonzo Duraldi.
Drea Clark.
April Wolf.
This week, we are talking about Phantom Thread and film fashion. To start off, here's a clip with Reynolds Woodcock, one of the greatest names in movies. Reynolds Woodcock, played by Daniel Day-Lewis, getting into it with his sister, Cyril, played by Leslie Manville.
Would you like me to ask Alma to leave?
No. Why?
Well, if you're going to make her a ghost, go ahead and do it, but please don't let her sit around waiting for you. I'm very fond of her.
Oh, you're very fond of her, are you? Well, in that case...
No, don't turn it on me. I don't want your cloud on my head.
Shut up, Cyril.
You can shut right up. Don't pick a fight with me. You certainly won't come out alive. I'll go right through you, and it'll be you who ends up on the floor. Understood?
That is the best quote.
Oh,
Oscar clip.
About it. Shout out to my so-and-so.
Oh, you
she's
so-and-so.
So great. Drea, can you give us a quick synopsis of the film, please?
I can.
Excellent.
Phantom Thread is set in the 1950s. It centers around Reynolds Woodcock, lead designer of the House of Woodcock. He creates amazing garments because this is designed for nobility, the upper classes, and goes through a string of women that are just there to serve as temporary muses until one day he meets Alma, an unassuming waitress who enters his life and turns it around. And it's beautiful and persnickety and elegant and... And then it ends in a very odd way.
Yeah, it does. Now, me, I'm not a fan of British stuffy movies. And based on the trailer, that's what I thought this was going to be. And then I watch this movie, and I see this big man child acting like a baby. And I was just like, well, shit, you just replaced that 50s gear with Jerboe fashion from the 90s, and that's my guy! I can relate! So I thought this movie was fantastic. What did you all think of the movie?
I mean, I hated it for the first 30, 35 minutes. And then I was like, oh, shit, Alma's a character? And then once she kind of started taking control of a narrative and becoming an equal to Daniel Day-Lewis's character of...
Reynolds Woodcock.
Reynolds Woodcock. hard time even
say
saying that
say
name.
Say it soft and it's almost like praying.
Yeah. Then it made me really adore Vicky Krieps and the movie itself. I was like, oh shit, she's a fucking good actress. I have never seen an actress come up against Daniel Day-Lewis and kind of steal things from him.
Yeah.
You know, he almost feels like a little bit deflated in some scenes, and you can tell that it's like, I don't know if it's just like reality too, where he's just like, oh shit.
She's so good. It's one of those things I have sometimes where I'm like, how in the world did they find a waitress this good at acting? Because she's just so believable as that character.
She worked at that place exactly. Where she serves
like,
on the bread.
She like served him and then now, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a twisty part too, because for the first half hour I love a stuffy British film. I mean, I can't. Like, sit me down, some Ivory and Merchant, and I'm good for days. But the first half hour, my main thought was, it is kind of surprising to me in the light of equality that this is a film that got such late Academy traction. And then when those reveals started happening of Alma having like this unexpected backbone and of Cyril, the sister, like the little clip we just heard, I had chills when that moment happened. And to me, the sort of character reveal of, oh, Reynolds is a man baby. Mm-hmm. Oh, and they know that. Because normally, man babies in movies, no one calls them on it.
Right.
No one credits them for that. And this movie is like, no, he is a man baby. And this is how you treat man babies.
Yeah, that's what I like about this movie, is that it's so much about what white men who have been called geniuses think they can get away with.
Yep.
And then what happens when they can't. and yeah, definitely, you think that Alma is going to be one thing and she's something else. You think Cyril is going to be one thing and she winds up being something else. And I don't know if this is going to be too spoilery, and if it is, just skip ahead a minute or two. But the ending of the film reminded me of one of my favorite Flannery O'Connor short stories, A Good Man Is Hard to Find, where somebody says she'd have been a good woman if there'd been somebody there to kill her every day of her life.
Shoot her
every day of her life. Yeah, and so that's the deal with Reynolds Woodcock. It's like, you have to literally kneecap him, basically, to, like, make him behave. And a female screenwriter, whom I greatly admire and always disagree with, got into it with me because she thought this movie was misogynist. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Oh, wow.
This is a total girl power movie. Where, like, the guy's awful behavior is all, it is intended to be awful. In a way, I think this is a more successful stab at what Mother was going for in terms of the sort of emotional toil of women in the service of men who think that their creativity absolves them from acting like human beings.
I'd love to look inside Paul Thomas Anderson's brain and just see how, like, what he thinks relationships are. 'Cause this movie, without giving away spoilers, what brings them together, what she does to him, and that kind of solidifies the love. I watch Punch Drunk Love again because I kind of have a problem with watching things over and over. But, like, there's a scene in that movie where they're both lying in bed with each other, and they're talking about wanting to eat each other's eyeballs out, and then they start making out in bed. And I was just like, this is the most beautiful goddamn thing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, he said the inspiration for this was he had the flu and Maya Rudolph took care of him.
Wow.
And that's where the she was so, you know, she was so accommodating and nurturing of him that's where the idea came from. Hmm.
I like to, again, from my base of loving a really traditional, stodgy romance, I really liked what, to me, that this had a twist of that true relationships are unique and different. They're people who's, like, the most devoted and sweet thing they can say is eating each other's eyeballs out, you know? And that this ended up, to me, in a very similar place as Secretary, that I was oh, you found a pair that you didn't know that you needed to match you. Like, that's the whole thing of a love story, right?
Is
that jigsaw of finding someone who fits in places that maybe you didn't even know needed to be fit. And for me, I loved how unexpected those spaces were, that it wasn't just, oh, he needed someone to stand up to him. Like, right. No, he needs a lot more than that.
Yeah, this is, I would say, both this and Secretary are far more interesting delves into those kind of relationships than, say, the 50 Shades movies, which are basically all about, like, the opposite of
which is
like, how can I file off of your rough edges and make you as vanilla as possible?
Were you guys expecting the movie to be as funny as it was?
I went really early. Like, in fact, PTA sat three rows ahead of me at the screen that I went to.
Yeah. Oh, you're burying the lead role.
Whatever, he bolted out. It's not like we had a moment or anything. but they didn't start showing this to anybody until after Thanksgiving, which is really late in the award cycle. And I knew almost nothing about it except that it was set in the world of fashion in the 1950s. For one thing, just the fact that he's so far from the San Fernando Valley now, you know, like that's just not even a thing. But yeah, totally. I certainly didn't know what to expect, and there's a lot of surprises in it. Yeah.
There was nothing about the description of this movie that made me want to see it at all.
Right?
Not one thing.
Yeah.
Even like the pretty pictures of like dresses and stuff, I was like, oh god, I really did not like Inherent Vice.
So bad.
Me neither.
It's so really bad.
And I don't understand. I mean, I don't. You know, tweet at me if you liked it. Try to tell me how and why. I don't really understand. I'm a big fan of P.T. Anderson, but this was like, oh great, we've lost him, he's never coming back to the good side, I will never like anything that he does again, because it was just like, oh, like an older male genius finds a young woman, I'm like, great, she's gonna be a young beautiful woman. And so, you know, to go off of that, the feminist screenwriter critique that you're, I can completely see how someone would say, still not for me. You know, I can still see that. For me, I think that it was just the strength of Vicky Creeps and
Leslie Manville.
Leslie Manville that really brought it home for me. If they hadn't been the ones playing these characters, I don't know how I would have felt about it. But it was. It's still a thing where, yeah, this young woman is still with an old dude who's like not that much fun. and she like her only joy is, you know, getting back at him.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's the setup. I think it's what he does with the movie. And I don't know. I think that, I mean, yeah, those two actresses are great. But I think that it's baked into the story that it's not going to be a, like, no one's ever going to root for the guy. You know, like, it's very much about the women and about them figuring out this situation and exerting the power that they have in that situation. So I find it sort of fundamentally, you know, it's a feminist story.
I think that some people would root for the guy, though. I mean, if you think of like the reactions that people had in the theater to that scene of Daniel Day-Lewis eating her, like, I think, what is it, like asparagus that was cooked in butter?
Yeah.
And the reaction that he was so mean to her, and everyone in our theater was just like laughing hysterically, and I'm like, oh, I think they're on his side now.
Oh.
And it's been, you know, I saw that back and forth happening with audiences.
Is that right? Yeah, you thought that? Oh,
see, I thought that they were laughing because they were like, this petulant bitch.
Yeah,
eat your asparagus, bitch.
Yeah,
one of the things that I was grateful that they included was they kept going back to that interview that she's having. And,
oh, yeah.
And it's also, to me, set up in this way that I assumed when we saw the reverse, it would be that she was talking to him, because it's always that, right? Like, she's saying all of these deep, insightful things to him about him. And then I loved that it was just, oh, no, this is a random doctor that's sort of flirting with her. But I really liked that it wasn't a setup for his ego, and it was nice insight, like Alonzo was saying, to how these women were fueling this world and getting her interior on what she got out of it and how he made her feel about herself and see herself. Because that's another thing lost in love stories and relationships a lot, is that positivity of, even in messed up ones like this, of what you beneficial, like what you get from the other person.
Yeah, because she feels special. I mean, she was a waitress and he was like, no, you.
Yeah.
You're the one.
All right, so let's talk about fashion in film in general. We asked our Twitter followers online who are some of their favorite fashion icons in film. It went all across the board with people liking different outfits and characters, but we just to you all here, April, I'll start with you. Do you have a favorite film fashion icon?
Wendy and Lucy, White Men Can't Jump.
Yeah. Yeah. See what I'm saying? See what I'm saying? That's what's up.
The Craft.
Yep.
And Pippi Longstocking. You put those up, and they were a little different because they weren't necessarily, to me, I read it as, because you said, like, my personal style icons.
Yeah, from film. I'm like, yeah, that's.
And being familiar with your wardrobe, I was like, man, did she nail it? And the best part about that was that you put the White Men Can't Jump, and I was like, I hope people know she means Woody Harrelson.
I definitely did.
Oh, I knew. Yeah.
Thank you, Dre.
There was no, like, oh, yeah, her and her Rosie Perez. Like,
no.
She
no.
means.
I definitely mean Woody Harrelson.
Exactly.
Alonzo, you had some solid ones?
Yeah, I think the fashion icon of movies ever is Audrey Hepburn.
Yes.
Who wears Givenchy in almost everything, but very famously didn't wear it in Two for the Road, where Stanley Donen wanted her to look like a normal human being, basically. And sort of she goes from, like, student to sort of bourgeois, you know, housewife. And so you see her going from, like, jeans and stuff to these, like, very, Paco Rabanne, Mary Quant, super on-point late 60s fashions, which she had never done before in movies and just is slaying it all. But my personal film style, I narrowed it down to Real Genius, The World According to Garp, American Splendor,
Oh my God.
White Christmas.
Boom, son. Boom. I almost tweeted at you because those pictures were great, and they were all like just cool shirts. I love Robin Williams' jacket, but they all had dope collars. And I was gonna tweet at you. Now you will be known as the Collar Father. Drea.
Well, mine, Audrey Hepburn, obviously. If you think of fashion in film, not just because she had such a connection with a particular designer and worked so famously with Edith Head and, like, just all these. But I would also put in Grace Kelly in that same category.
Yeah.
Of when you think of true fashion in film and, like, the pieces that she wore in everything that she's done, but, like, Rear Window,
yeah.
Every single outfit
High Society.
I would wear every day of my life if I looked like Grace Kelly. But, like, I watch those movies and I'm like, oh, why don't we wear gloves? What? And there's, because it's, and that's, it's fashion. It's not even costumes because it's couture and it's beautifully tailored and it's not functional at all.
And they fool you into thinking that it's day wear.
Yes. She doesn't own a single thing that should be worn before 7 o'clock. Yeah. But yeah, anything, or High Society, Grace
yes,
Kelly.
Yes.
Like, there's just so many iconic things. And the same, like, if you thought of just single fashion moments that Grace Kelly and Audrey Hepburn would have a ton, Keira Knightley's gown, garment, In Atonement.
Yeah.
Like, there's just sort of fashion moments in film that kind of transcend costume, that are these beautiful, I love clothes. So there's, yeah. it's
like Beetlejuice, for sure.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes. That plaid shirt that Alec Baldwin rocks in there. Oh, yeah. Come on now.
The Laura Ashley floral print that Gina Davis is wearing.
The sheets, yeah.
Yeah.
As I'm becoming an older Latino male, I am so, like, trying to get to, like, Louis Guzman status. I've loved him since forever, but there's something about that dude. And just, like, watching Boogie Nights again, his outfits in that movie, he has a scene with Julianne Moore where they're sitting by the pool and he's telling her about how he just wants to show off to his brothers back home. Look at what I've done. And he's got this cream-colored shirt on, gut out. Bam! Just reminds me of my dad so much. I would rock that on the regular. The regular. Just so dope.
You can wear the cream shirt even though you don't have a gut, though, Ricky.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, you don't have to wait until you get a gut.
I will get a gut. I feel like that's like a fatherly Latino staple. Like, you have that shiny, mira mi hijo, viste, tomando mucho. Like, oh, I love it. I also just love, when I was, man, every outfit that Eddie Murphy wears in Boomerang,
Oh, God, that movie is amazing.
He has a picture I put online today. That jacket that he wears, I'm looking for it to this day. I bought this hack-ass, I think it was like Calvin Klein when I worked at Carson Perry Scott in college, and I would like wear it knowing like I'm trying to look like Eddie Murphy and Boomerang right now.
Boomerang is such a great like glossy, it is basically a Rock Hudson and Doris Day movie,
yep.
But with like every awesome black person in the 90s
yeah.
in it,
yeah.
you know, and it's like, yeah, these guys deserve a Rock Hudson and Doris Day movie too,
yep.
and you know, and it is so constantly on point as far as, again, it's another one of those movies where these are all after seven looks, but we're just going to wear them to the office because yep. damn it, we can. You know?
That movie is black excellence fashion. You know what I'm saying? All right, so let's see what some people online said. Now, oh, I love this name already. At the Trash is Right says, everyone in Party Monster and Kamikaze Girls.
That's some elaborate shit there.
Yeah. That's not holding back.
At Mr. Glynnis wrote, K-Stu, and included a pic of her sitting on an apple box wearing a leather bomber jacket, jeans, and white sneakers.
Personal shopper. That,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's another fashion film totally. Where she tries on that dress, and you're like, what?
Damn.
That's right. She got that little sparkly thing going. I just remember that.
It's a weird, weird time when she wears that dress. Weird time.
A lot going on.
And Sissy and H would answer to Kay Thompson in Funny Face.
Oh, yeah.
Funny. Everything about Funny Face. Audrey also has amazing clothes in that.
And Kay Thompson is totally channeling Deanna Vreeland. Speaking of which, I want to recommend two things. There's an app on Apple TV called M2M. It stands for Made to Measure, and it's all fashion shit. And it's like people's runway shows and interviews with designers. Like, if you're a fashion person, you need to have this thing. And they have movies on there, and one of them is a late 60s film called Qui Êtes-vous, Polly Magoo, which is directed by this guy, I want to say his name is William Marshall, who used to be a photographer for Vogue. And there's a character in that movie based on Deanna Vreeland that is such a mean caricature that Vreeland fired him from ever working at Vogue again.
Amazing.
But the other thing that's great on M2M, and it reminded me of Phantom Thread, is this 5 or 6 episode French miniseries called Signé Chanel. And it's about the creation of a Chanel line from, like, you know, Karl Lagerfeld drawings to, you know, the show. And it's almost entirely about the seamstresses because they are working their asses off and doing these things and unmaking them and redoing them and starting over and da-da-da. And so all those scenes in Phantom Thread where you see that, like, army of seamstresses, I was like, oh, it's Signé Chanel!
Did you see Dior and I?
Yes.
So there's an amazing documentary from a couple years ago for anyone that really dug that part of it. That's a similar setup. It's when Raf Simons took over the Dior Couture line.
And he'd never done women's clothes
before. And he'd only done menswear, and he was kind of a minimalist. And it's a similar thing because they have an atelier that's upstairs, and then the old women at the top, and one of them's worked there for like 40-some years, and he's like just deferential to them, as he should be. But if you were into the nuts and bolts of Phantom Thread,
oh, God. Yeah. That movie made me cry.
Oh, yeah.
Dior and Me. It's amazing. Oh, yeah. And Signé Chanel, you get to meet the woman who's sadly passed away, but this old lady who lives on a horse farm who makes all the Chanel braid. And, like, has been, it can never taught anybody else how to do it. So I hope somebody learned before she died. But she's amazing.
I want to say the two things that I forgot. Anna May Wong is a fashion icon.
Totally.
And then, and also I think Anna Biller is doing her part to bring fashion
yes.
back into films.
Oh, God, yes.
I'm going to throw that out there.
And blue eyeshadow.
And blue eyeshadow, yes.
All right, so to wrap it up with Phantom Thread, should we screen it, stream it, or skip it? I say screen the hell out of it.
Yeah, it's screen it in 70mm if you can. It was shot in 35, but there's a 70 blow-up that's playing in theaters that can do it.
I saw that at the Arclight, yeah. I would screen it. I would screen it 70mm if you can. And I would go with someone that you can have a long discussion with afterwards, because I think the more you pick that apart, the more interesting it is.
Just skip it.
Yes! Yes!
No.
Yes!
No, you should go and see it in the theater.
She says with a sly grin. All right, when we come back, we will be playing Sundance the Game and doing our staff picks. We'll be right back.
I love it.
Oh, good
man,
stuff.
Every time.
Well, I hope that you're enjoying this podcast you're listening to as much as we are pretending to. But anyway, why not listen to another podcast, too? It's called The Flophouse.
And on our podcast, we have recently watched a movie, often a bad movie, and we review it on our podcast, but mainly talk about other stuff and, I don't know, hang out.
It's all about hanging out, feeling like you're being with your best friends. Who are your best friends? Us three. Dan McCoy, Emmy Award-winning writer for The Daily Show, Stuart Wellington, owner of the best bar in Brooklyn, Hinterlands, and Elliot Kalin, former Emmy-winning head writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, former head writer of Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return, so many things. Author of the upcoming children's book,
All right, that's enough.
The Elliot's credits just go on and on.
Yeah, but if you like the idea of listening to three funny guys talk about bad movies, then why not come over and listen to The Flophouse? It's available at MaximumFun.org or wherever fine podcasts are found.
So get out of here.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in studio, I have...
April Wolf.
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Now, this week, Alonzo and April came back from the Sundance Film Festival, and we're going to hear highlights from their trip in a minute. But before we get into all that, Alonzo, I heard you kept yourself busy during those boring long hours at Sundance with a little game you invented. Can we hear about it? Because we want to play.
So I was having lunch with my friend Gary, and he was looking through the schedule and the titles of the films, and he started doing a thing where he would list four film titles, and I had to guess which one was fake. And which three were actual Sundance titles. And it's this thing where I think a lot of indie movies have this sort of unique brand of cockeyed poetry in their titles where they just it gets kind of easy to sort of come up with fake versions, and it also comes up it's also tricky to figure out which ones aren't fake because they sound ridiculous. So so we played which one's not a real Sundance title.
All right.
Drea and I have each come up with a couple of lists here, and we're going to try and stump the band.
I'm very excited about this.
All right. Now,
that one. No.
Of these four titles, tell me which one is not a real... This is from the whole history of the Sundance Film Festival.
Okay. Exactly.
Going on since the late 80s, because I thought this year's would be too easy. All right. One of these is not a real Sundance title. Tell me which one.
Okay.
Color of a Brisk and Leaping Day. Three Seasons.
Ooh.
Mothers of Sunset. Or... God Grew Tired of Us.
Mothers of Sunset.
Mothers of Sunset.
Mothers of Sunset.
Damn, that was the fake one. Yes.
Yay! We did it!
You all followed April's lead on that.
I did feel that one. The other one just... They felt right as movie titles.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
I know the plot lines for those. But Mothers and Sunset, I was like, no.
I was so excited about Color of a Brisk and Leaping Day because it sounds like it'd be fake, but it's a real
amazing
movie.
See, it's so ridiculous that it has to be true.
Yeah, I guess you're right. All right, what do you got, Ray?
All right, I have a similar theme, actually. My Brother's Eyes, Two Mothers, Songs My Brothers Taught Me.
Come on now.
The Eyes of My Mother.
Ooh.
What was the first one again?
My Brother's Eyes.
My brother's eyes.
God damn it.
Yeah, because I love The Eyes of My Mother. It's a great
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, Songs My Brothers Taught Me was the Chloe Zhao from a couple
years.
I picked mine all from just the last, like, 4 years, not this year. I was trying to be nicer.
Fool. All right, let's see if I have any better luck on this one. When the Mountains Tremble. Brambles and Thorns.
Ooh.
Chile, : When Will It End?
That's my vote already.
Who the Hell is Juliet?
I say Chile, When Will It End?
What's the second one?
Brambles and Thorns.
What's the first one?
When the Mountains Tremble.
I'm going to say Brambles and Thorns, and if it is When the Mountains Tremble, and that's fake, I'm going to make a movie by that name.
I think it's Brambles and Thorns.
It is Brambles and Thorns. That is the fake one. Chile, : When Will It End is a real movie.
So my final one is the same sort of lyricism, the sort of the beautiful language that comes into films.
The alliteration.
Mm-hmm. Nuts. Wiener. Dope. And balls.
Ooh.
I'm going to say nuts. Well, it's a Barbra Streisand movie, but I know it didn't play Sundance.
I'm going to say balls.
It's either nuts or balls. That's why I don't know. Nuts or balls. Nuts or balls.
That's always the question, isn't it?
I was going to say, isn't it always?
I think I have a new ringtone.
I mean, let's just go nuts.
Let's go crazy.
Ricky was correct. Yes. It's balls.
Yes.
Nuts is a documentary made by Penny Lane that came out just a year or two ago.
Oh,
yeah.
That's okay. Shit.
I just saw Wiener. It was great. That sounds so bad.
Now I have two new ringtones.
Maybe they could work that quote into the theme. Theme
song. In the beginning, I just saw Wiener. It was great. You said it in such a white voice, too.
On tonight's Who Shot You?
Wiener's such a white word.
Ricky says.
I just saw Wiener. It was great.
Were there any standouts at Sundance that you guys actually saw? Real movies?
Dude.
Bruh.
Sorry to Bother You.
Yes! Oh! April! Okay. Boots, talk about it.
Boots Riley is like, fuck, it's genius.
Yes.
The whole time I was sitting there, I was just like, can I take more notes? Can I take more notes? It's like, it's, first off, everyone who listens knows my fucking politics. It is pro-union, and vehemently so. And it's like, God, I don't know. Keith Stanfield is like, the best that he's been in a movie. I think like his talent has not been wasted here, and he gets to be the lead who is like charismatic and funny and weird, but also gets a little bit of dramatic stuff in there, and it is kind of magical realism. I think in my review I described it as something like if Afrofuturism like took a hard right turn in the wrong direction and then had to stop at a gas station for directions back home.
Ooh.
And it was just like they're, you know, an Afrofuturism, you know, the birthplace in the Bay Area too, and this is set in Oakland, and you can feel this kind of energy of history behind it, and Boots Riley is also a very political person, so it's infused into everything, and there's so much humor in it, it's so hard to describe. I fucking love it. And
yes.
Tessa Thompson is amazing, hilarious. She shows up every scene with like a new pair of crazy fucking earrings. because she's an artist that she made. She wears a t-shirt around in one scene that's just like, the future is female ejaculation. Like, she's just like so,
yes.
She's so balls out weird. And she reminds me, like having lived in Oakland, I was like, these people are Oakland. It is weird. It is wonderful. It is an inherently political place. And I just love I love this movie so much.
Perfect. That's what's up. Shout out to Boots Riley from the crew. Gun this, exploited, and they hung us. I'd like to take a minute to say, fuck Columbus. Y'all need to listen to the crew. Thank you for that very much, April. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
My favorite thing I saw up there probably was Lizzie, which is the Lizzie Borden movie that Chloe Sevigny has been trying to get made for quite some time.
Right.
And she plays the infamous potential murderess. We don't know. She never testified at the trial. She was acquitted, so who can say, really? And that's the thing. The Lizzie Borden case is, because there's so much we don't know, it's this sort of Rorschach blot that people can kind of throw anything they want to at it. And this movie kind of portrays her as a woman denied agency. And so if she did kill those people, that's because they took away all of her other choices. And Kristen Stewart is amazing as the Irish maid who comes to live with them. And she and Lizzie Borden, like, get very into each other. And, like, Sevigny and Stewart are super hot together on screen. It's beautifully shot and tense, and you know, the way the camera is placed kind of puts you in Lizzie's head, because she, like, you know, she has these seizures, she has what they call, you know, these spells, and you get the sense of unease of just what it's like to be in her brain. And the supporting cast is amazing. It's like Jamie Sheridan and Fiona Shaw and Kim Dickens and Dennis O'Hare. And I heard some people kind of saying, I thought it was slow. It's like, fuck you! We can't have nice things! If you are a fan of the sort of... There's a great history of female murderers on screen. sometimes they're lesbians, sometimes one or both of them is a maid, you know, like La Ceremonie and you know, Thelma and Louise and a lot of other films.
Monster. The Handmaiden.
Sister, My Sister. There's a lot of these, you know, it's kind of a recurring thing. And I think this is very much in that tradition, and it is sexy and it's provocative and it's violent.
All right.
And, okay. Lizzie loved it.
All right. Drea?
So I have Leave No Trace by Deborah Granik. She also directed Winter's Bone a few years ago, which was sort of Jennifer Lawrence's launch pad. And Leave No Trace is a father and a daughter who have been living off the grid, but sort of near society.
Grid adjacent,
exactly. And the father is played by Ben Foster, and the daughter is played by an unknown Kiwi actress that I don't remember her name, but she's incredible
in
it.
Thomasin McKenzie or something like that?
I think there might something be a third like name that. In there somewhere.
Yeah. Yes. Thomasin's the character's name, I think.
But I think it's both.
I think it's also, yeah. Oh. I think it was like the cute she changed the name.
Skewing the lines. Nice. So it's so beautifully done. It's one of those movies that handles interpersonal relationships and moments in a way that's so believable, that gives you such a sense of space and a sense of worldview, that you're sympathetic through what they're going through. The father has PTSD from time served as a soldier, and it's handled really gracefully, that really puts you in his, you know, driver's seat. Like, you get how he's going through the world and how it's hard, but it's also not like just that. So it's them sort of maybe being incorporated back into the world and having, you know, conflict with that. But it's so beautifully done and just a really immersive movie. And I also really enjoyed it because, to me, it is a rare movie. It is just an A storyline. There's not really, there's not B story. There's not like, it's the father and daughter, and then there's a whole other story of like, the daughter is actually a piano prodigy. And then, like, this is just the father and daughter and how the two of them are going through the world and how they deal with that. And I think it's beautiful.
Winter's Bone is a little bit like that too. It's just like, no, she needs to get this thing back.
Right.
And that's the only thing that, you know, you might have to deal with some other people, but like, you got to get that thing back.
Granik also directed a film called To the Bone that was Vera Farmiga's breakthrough.
Yeah.
Word. Well, these all sound great. I just got my movie pass. Whoever was at Sundance, buy all these. I got movie pass. I go see one a day. I really want to see that Sorry to Bother You. That is high on my list. Fantastic. Well, before we end the show here, we'd like to give our staff picks. It's picks that we have, and the movies are available anywhere. My staff pick this week is, I'm actually kind of cheating because it's been years since I've seen this movie, but they just put the director's cut on HBO, and it stars our boy, Reynolds Woodcock, Daniel Day-Lewis. It's Last of the Mohicans. My man, Michael Mann's Last of the Mohicans.
I will find you.
That is one of the many great moments that Daniel Day-Lewis has in it. So Last of the Mohicans is my pick. Alonzo, what do you have?
Well, one of my big snubs for the Oscars this year, again, I'm going to stop saying that word, but sadly overlooked by the Oscars this year, was the great cinematographer Soyombu Mukdipram, and if I'm saying his name right, my apologies, a Thai director of photography who did Call Me By Your Name, which was just stunning looking. I want to recommend an earlier film that he did that is streaming on Amazon. It won the Palme d'Or at Cannes. It is Api Chatpong Virasethakul's amazing movie, Uncle Boonmi, Who Can Recall His Past Lives. It is... I don't even know how to describe this movie.
You can say the director's name, but you can't describe the movie.
It is a breathtaking mix of, like, Thai mysticism and family drama and reincarnation and... monkeys, spirits, I don't even know. It's just fucking great. And, like, my husband loves this filmmaker and loves all of his movies, and I've seen some of the other ones, and they didn't really do it for me, but I love this one. And I don't know anything about Thai mysticism, so I kind of went in cold. But it's one of those movies, like, turn off the phone, turn off the other lights in the room, watch it on a nice big TV, go with it, and let it take you to crazy-ass places. It is gorgeous and a mind fuck in the best way. What? Uncle Boonmi, who can recall his past lives.
And where is that available at? Do you know where
it's on Amazon Prime.
It's on Amazon Prime. All right. Excellent. April, what do you have for us?
because I put a Wendy and Lucy photo on, I'm gonna suggest
please,
that.
Please do.
Kelly Reichardt's film from 2008?
Sure.
No, yeah. 2000, early 2000s. I can't remember. Yeah, Wendy and Lucy, it was kind of like the art house venture for Michelle Williams, where she was kind of given this chance to show that she was more than Dawson's Creek. Mm. And that bore a very fruitful relationship with that director, Kelly Reichardt. And then they went on to make Meek's Cut Off and then Certain Women. And I will be moderating a Q&A with Kelly Reichardt at the Egyptian Theater on February 3rd. So,
oh, wow.
You know, it's in between a screening of Wendy and Lucy and Meek's Cut Off. So, you know, get ready for that. And then, you know, come and join us on the 3rd, whatever you want to do.
Yeah,
oh, those movies are so great.
Handle that. Dre, what do you got for us?
I have, well, I said this is, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight if I don't give a real quick shout to Diana Ross and Mahogany.
Yeah, back, let it out.
Back
y'all.
In
let
our fashion
out.
Discussion, yes. Because she's got this peach kimono moment that deserves, and like,
designed
it would be,
by Miss Ross herself.
I mean, what? So.
All the costumes in that movie were designed by Miss Ross.
Why am I surprised? So, why am I surprised
right?
at this?
I'm a winner, baby. I'm Mahogany.
Like, none of us should be able to sleep if that hadn't been, you know,
slash
fixed.
That baby grand you call a smile.
Oh, my God.
That should be in the intro
right.
for the,
right.
the
exactly.
intro.
So
boom.
The movie that I'm going to recommend came out this year, and it's on, it's either on, like, Netflix or something now, but I know you can rent it, is Battle of the Sexes, which I had missed because it came and went so quickly. I expected it to have a lot more impact than it did. So I was like, oh, it must be kind of a dud. But the directors I love, Dayton Ferris, I've tracked them since their music video days. They did like the Smashing Pumpkins Tonight Tonight video, the George Millier, am I saying that right?
Millier, yeah.
Okay.
Trip to the Moon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of theirs and, you know, sort of Little Miss Sunshine and all that. Battle of the Sexes, I was so nicely surprised by the scope of it. It is something that I was, like, genuinely surprised it didn't do better in terms of what it speaks to of this moment of what Billie Jean King was going through as an athlete looking for equal pay, as a woman coming out and, you know, sort of navigating her sexuality. And one of the things I appreciated was her counterpart, the Bobby Riggs, Steve Carell character. I really liked that he wasn't just a punching bag. He wasn't just, oh, the white guys who do all wrong. Like, he's horribly obnoxious, and every interview he says is just, like, abysmal and taken from real life. But the man who runs the tennis organization is much more the true villain, like the kind of behind the scenes who feels those things rather than acts them out. So I had a really my friend and I watched it, and then we're like, who should we have called about this? This was really a fun view. So I really enjoyed Battle of the Sexes, and that is out right now.
Word. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, y'all. Next week, we are going to be changing things up, I believe, in the definitely next week and in coming weeks afterwards due to just our lack of excitement of choices of what will be in the theaters.
we're not going to talk about Maze Runner, The Death Cure?
I haven't watched the first. Are there two?
Don't.
Three? All
don't.
Right, excellent.
Oh, my God, I did.
Oh, me too. It was my job.
So next week, I was lucky enough to be chosen to pick the first movie that we aren't watching in the theater, and I have chosen one of my favorite movies, the Wachowskis' Cloud Atlas. Oh, yeah, the looks on all of your faces is making me even more excited to talk about this movie.
Revolutionary future waitress.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing, you want to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, please do. I won't stop you. In fact, if you give us 5 stars, we'll pledge our love for you next week and every week. Shout out to Matthew P.D., who says Ricky, April, and Alonzo have crazy fun chemistry. Shout out to my DJ Crazy Fun Chemistry. And timing covering movies today. It's the kind of conversation where you feel like you're chatting with friends and breaking the movie down just after seeing it. Highly recommend. Thank you, Matthew PD. 666 Asmodeus666. Really good film criticism from a group of people with different opinions.
Thanks, you guys.
The differentest.
I also want to give a big shout out to one of our listeners, Alexander Venerated in Vegas, for giving us some very interesting info about emojis after April confessed she thought the Me Too emoji was a vagina. He apparently wrote a term paper about the use of emojis, and here's a little snippet from his email. He says, there are no remotely sexual emojis, despite the fact that the intent and original goal of emojis is to express thoughts and ideas. People discuss sex organs and bodily fluids a lot, and I noted this in my research as a point where emojis could improve.
I love that. I love it. That's a study.
Eggplant,
yeah.
Eggplant.
Yeah, he mentioned eggplants in the yeah.
Eggplant
the email.
And tears will only take you so far. But yeah, he's like, are you majoring in emojis or like
that's the future, you guys.
Hey, y'all, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet us at WhoShotYaPod or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Drea, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you to Alonzo and April. Y'all are dope as always.
Thanks.
You have been listening to Who Shot Ya. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. Our birthday boy producer is back. That's Casey O'Brien. This is a production of MaximumFun.org, and that's what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.